Good morning, everyone. My name is Julie Fedorchak. I'm chair of the Public Service Commission. We're gathered here today for a formal hearing on Basin Electric Power Cooperative's application for a wind energy facility lighting waiver. This is case number PU-21-375. With me are Commissioners Brian Crosius and Randy Christman. We don't really have a script for this. We've done this a few different ways. We like to conduct it like a regular formal hearing, where the company makes its case, call your witnesses one by one, we ask questions, staff asks questions, then you call your next witness, everyone goes through the questions. It just seems a little easier. It is a public hearing. There could be people on listening on the phone, or they could attend in person. It doesn't appear as if anyone's here in person, but we will have the public testimony opportunity at the end. And so we'll just move through the morning in that format, if that's all right with both the parties. And we'll go through the questioning, Christman, Crosius, myself, in that order. And so with that, I don't have any opening comments myself. I think that, you know, you've laid out some initial information in your letter to us expressing the need for the waiver, and look forward to the rest of the story here this morning. So I'll see if my colleagues have any opening comments. Commissioner Christman.
I do not. We need to get started.
Okay. Commissioner Crosius.
I don't. Good morning, everyone.
Okay. Then I guess we could do opening statements. We haven't in the past. I think we'll just move forward and turn the case over to the company to get started, and introduce yourselves for the record, please. And we should probably have staff do that as well. So we'll go ahead and do the introductions, then we'll turn over to you.
Brian Johnson, BSC Legal.
Patrick Fawn, Commission Staff.
All right.
Amanda Wengler, Basin Electric.
Kevin Soley, Basin Electric Environmental.
Anine Merkins, Basin Electric, Office of General Counsel.
Okay.
Troy Tweeten, Basin Electric, Operations.
Jean Schaefer, Basin Electric, Senior Legislative Representative.
Thank you. And Amanda, are you the attorney for today, or?
I'll be me, Your Honor.
Okay, and what was your name again? I'm sorry.
Anine Merkins.
Anine.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And how do you spell the last name?
Merkens.
Okay. Anine, then I'll turn it over to you to take the lead.
Thank you. Chairman Fedorchak and Commissioners, my name is Anine Merkens, Counsel for Basin Electric Power Cooperative.
For our recording, everyone needs to pretty much speak into the mic.
You bet. Thank you. Basin Electric is here today to request a waiver of the statutory and regulatory requirement to install light mitigating technology at Prairie Winds, North Dakota 1 for reason of technical infeasibility. I have two witnesses with me today, Mr. Kevin Soley, who will go first, and then Ms. Amanda Wengler, who will follow Mr. Soley.
Well, good morning, Madam Chair, Commissioners, staff. Again, Kevin Soley with Basin Electric Environmental. I was hired by Basin Electric back in 2007, and I work in the Environmental Services section. I've been responsible for securing PSC permits for a number of different types of projects, including electrical transmission lines, pipelines, and the subject of this hearing, the North Dakota Prairie Winds, a wind energy facility. Beyond that, I've been responsible for reporting and compliance during construction and post-construction for a number of other projects. I guess starting with a little history, Basin Electric applied to the PSC for the site certificate in March of 2009, and the certificate was issued in August of 2009, and if I remember it, I think that was the second PSC hearing that I had the opportunity to testify. So it goes back a little ways for me. Because there was rural utility service financing and an interconnection with WAPA, there was a NEPA process that we had to do an environmental assessment with scoping. That was completed as well. The project was constructed during late summer and fall of 2009 and went into commercial operation just before January of 2010. And then the permit was transferred from Basin Electric to Prairie Winds in December of 2009. So I can get to the, I guess, the rationale for the waiver request. And so it really comes down to U.S. Air Force concerns with flight safety and security for their rotary-winged aircraft, for helicopters, in and around the Intercontinental Ballistic Missile Site, or IBM sites that are in the area. And I don't know if you have copies of the map that we provided, but you can see that wind turbines surround launch site D02, and I mean totally surrounded almost, and are in very close proximity to D11 and D03. And then the other thing to point out is the site labeled D1. D01 is the launch control facility for all of the D series launch sites.
Kevin, one second. Mm-hmm. I think your attorney has an extra copy, and I don't have one in my file, so I think I might be the only
one. So, yeah, there are actually two maps. This one probably shows it, okay. Shows it the best.
Thank you.
So.
No, I have it on my iPad. I'm good. Thank mm-hmm. you.
So I'll continue. Ms. Wangler could speak to it in greater detail, but there was a lot of coordination between the Air Force and Basin Electric when we initially developed this site. Certainly there were concerns from the Air Force about turbine lighting, and there was also a lot of close coordination on the Air Force's underground cables and then also on microwave paths that may be blocked by the turbines. And so once the commission promulgated the ADLS rules, Basin has been in contact with the Air Force regarding this potential change in turbine lighting. And really, the communications with the Air Force culminated in a written response from Major General Lutton on January 20, 2021, indicating such a change in turbine lighting would jeopardize flight safety and operational security in and around the ICBM complexes. And a copy of Major General Lutton's memorandum was attached to our initial waiver request. I think the flight safety issue probably doesn't need a whole lot of explanation. You know, if the military aircraft are operating in low light conditions and for some reason the system fails and the obstruction lighting doesn't come on, there's, you know, an obvious concern with, you know, kind of a potential collision between the aircraft and the turbines. The operational security that the Air Force has is a little bit more abstract, I'd say. So if we can imagine if there was an emergency at one of these nuclear missile sites, the military aircraft would be coming in tactically, so they would be flying, is what's called nap of the earth, so as low as possible and likely without any kind of lighting without any lights themselves, and they'd be using typically NVGs or whatever, night vision goggles, and so we can't speak as an expert for the Air Force and their tactics and techniques, but having spent 26 in the military, I think that's how it would go. You know, I think it would be a pretty serious operation. So the concern here is that if the ADLS is working correctly, it would then sense the helicopter as it approaches the site with all the lights turned off, and it would essentially give away the position of that the tactical aircraft. And so that would make it more likely to see interdiction from, ground air fire or other potential threats. And so, again, that's part of the U.S. military's an upper hand is we can come in, we, I guess, rule the night is kind of the term. But so having the lights come on would essentially eliminate kind of any tactical advantage and kind of, you know, ruin kind of the advantage of surprise. Ms. Wangler could provide additional detail, but I also understand that the flight paths detected by the ADLS are recorded and stored electronically, and the Air Force has indicated that any recording and storage of their flight paths would also be an operational security concern. And really, I guess, to wrap up for me, it's really due to these serious concerns, raised by the U.S. Air Force regarding the implementation of ADLS around Prairie Winds, and as we understand it, at a neighboring or potentially neighboring nearby wind facility, Basin Electric is requesting a waiver of the requirement to install light mitigating technology, and as Ms. Merkins mentioned, based on technical infeasibility.
All right.
So I'd be happy to try to answer questions, and I will just say right up front, Ms. Wangler's our expert on radar and electrical stuff, so she might get some of these questions that you have.
Okay. So, Kevin, if you feel like you want to defer to her and any questions that you get, feel free, and then we'll call her up next.
Okay.
All right. Excellent. Commissioner Christman, do you have any questions for Mr. Soley?
I do. And initially here, at least, not so much on the safety issue, but I'm just getting back to the map pages. The handful of small turbines to the north of the wind farm we're talking about. There's two of them that were set up in kind of one project, and was it three in the other project?
Correct.
Okay. And I didn't write it down, but when you said that the Basin built this and it became operational in 2009, and then shortly after it was transferred to
Prairie Winds. Correct.
Those five turbines were not transferred to Prairie Winds, or they were?
They were never included. So the at the time, I think the threshold for siting was 100 megawatts. So anything less than 100 megawatts didn't go through. Didn't need a certificate of site compatibility. The other thing that I think is really important to note is that those turbines to the north are on a completely separate interconnection. They interconnect with a Varendry substation. They're not controlled by the same SCADA, I believe. And we actually did a separate NEPA process for those. So that, the three turbines, the three white, the GE turbines, it was a categorical exclusion with RUS. For the NEPA process. So there were two distinct and separate projects.
In leading up to this, I'd kind of forgotten about those five and just thinking of this as one big wind farm. And so I didn't even talk to staff here, so I'm going to ask them about this too. But so clearly, in order to not implement ADLS, you need a waiver from us for Prairie Winds. Is it Basin's belief that you need the waiver for the other turbines as well, or that they don't meet the level of the law, and so you just don't have to do it even without a waiver?
Since there was no site certificate issued for that, it appears that the rules would not apply to that, what's called mine at wind, I guess, and it's again a separate project. And so it appears that the rules are very specific that, you know, site certificate issued after or before certain dates. And since there's no site certificate, it's, I guess, perhaps a gray area. But it is, I think, close enough to Prairie Winds, North Dakota, that the same concerns with the Air Force would carry over.
Yeah. So You guys pay pretty close attention to what we do, so I assume you're aware that we have a whole bunch of these waivers that have been requested. A number of the others that don't have the Air Force issues have mentioned, you know, initially not doing anything in like 2017 and 18 because they were waiting on potential LIDS technology.
Yes.
You're familiar with LIDS?
Yes.
So have you looked into that at all for this facility
as a
possibility?
I will answer, and I would say you could come back to Ms. Wangler for that, but as we understand, the LIDS is not has not been approved by FAA, so it wouldn't be a viable system to bring forward at this time. And, you know, I guess I can't say how the Air Force would view that.
I'm wondering how Basin Electric would view it. You know, someday if that becomes something that is able to get approval, is that something that might be workable with this facility?
I would think we would come back to the commission and seek guidance on how to proceed.
Okay. I think that's all the questions I have.
Okay. Mr. Cautious?
Just a couple of questions. Again, thank you for your service. Greatly appreciated. Why we're here, and it's quiet this morning, which,
well,
again,
except for the baby,
is greatly appreciated. Well,
even that's
a good example. Yeah, every now and then, full disclosure, you'll see all three of us break out into a smile, and it means
someone's trotting by.
Yeah, someone's trotting by with the baby. So, when have you had during your conversations with Minot Air Force Base, have they talked or indicated a willingness to have a partial solution to where maybe a portion of the turbines had the light mitigating technology applied to them? And then I don't know what the radius from missile site, for example, D-02 is the one that's really surrounded. And I understand you have line of flight or going around that those particular.
I guess I will answer and also defer. I think one of the concerns regarding operational security is that the tracking and recording of flight paths, and as I understand it, the airspace or envelope goes out 6 to 10 miles, and so everything that's flying within 6 to 10 miles of the wind farm is going to be tracked and recorded, and so even if it doesn't enter close enough, I think what is it? Well, I guess I shouldn't ask, but I think approximately 3 nautical miles is when the lights are supposed to turn on. So even before it gets there, it would be tracking and recording flight paths. So I would think the concern would be similar.
So it's a looking at the map and the sections and going out 6 to 10 miles, it in effect it becomes an all or nothing proposition in terms of how the base is looking at it.
For the airspace, the envelope that's tracked and recorded.
Okay. I just wanted to ask that question because, not to look at it in a very simplistic sense, but for example, if the north half of the facility could be remedied. Okay, that makes sense. Do you know, going back to the history, the impetus for surrounding D-02?
The turbines were sited really to capture the wind resource the best, and so there was modeling software, and so it's sort of an obvious thing is like, yet we're gonna, all the high spots are gonna get turbines. But there's more to that in the modeling software, and I think it also did some modeling on the shadow flicker and residences. And so there was a sighting process. So there was certainly, it wasn't on purpose that they surrounded the missile site, but that's kinda, I think, what the sighting model for, to get the most megawatts out of it kinda put the turbines.
And I realize that's not germane to what we're really looking at today, but it was a curiosity question. And the last question I have is, do you know what the level of accuracy is if, and I'm just curious, not only for this facility, if light mitigating technology were applied, if it were able to be applied, what's the level of accuracy on the lights coming on when they're supposed to, and not, is it, it can't be, is it 100%, is it 99%?
I guess I don't know the answer to that. I do know that there are, the FAA studies the different technologies to before they're approved, and so there might be some information in some of those FAA documents or studies, technical documents. I don't know.
And I think I do have one last question. Any unique concerns that have been raised by the military, the base, over the past 2 years that weren't raised in 2009, I think it became operational. Is that correct?
Correct.
So 2006, 7, 8, whenever it was being proposed, is there anything unique that they're bringing forward at this time that would be different than...
I think the only change is would be the light mitigating technology.
Okay.
That's the concern.
All right. Thank you. I don't have any other questions.
Okay. I just have a couple questions. So you raised an interesting point that I don't know that we've thought about, and that is for the wind facilities that don't have a site certificate. I don't know how many there are, but there are a few, and we did pull them into... in the last session, the decommissioning requirements, but no one mentioned the fact that they were not part of the lighting things, so we'll have to go back and do that next session, I guess. I have to believe that the accuracy of the lights turning on is very high, or the FAA would not approve them, or approve the system. Likewise, you know, there would always be a risk of the lights not working and, you know, just failing at some point, too, that would also put pilots in jeopardy. So, but I recognize, the companies and Air Force's concerns about whether or not the lights system is going to work, I think, are somewhat exaggerated, probably, but the way in which the system functions, giving away the position of the aircraft, I do appreciate that. And so as far as a waiver goes, it is different than the extensions that the others are requesting. It's a waiver. And so has the company thought about the length of time? You kind of got into this with Commissioner Christman, but I want to explore it a little further. Obviously, technology is constantly changing, and it's likely, I would say, that there's going to be a new one in the future that may very well work here and not create any concerns with the Air Force. So if we did approve the waiver, which obviously I'm leaning towards, I don't know that you have any choice, if we do approve it, what does the company recommend in terms of language to create a trigger for an ongoing review or adapting new technology as it becomes available? Have you guys thought about that, or could you go back and think about language in that regard?
I think we would have to regroup and go back and think about what that would look like. And I think that would be, Ms. Murphy's would be on track of that.
Okay. All right. I would welcome that. Our staff will come up with some language as well. But I'm assuming that the company would like to have a stab at it if you, so the sooner the better as you offer that kind of language. Those are all the questions for me. So, staff, do you have any questions?
It has been submitted to the FAA for approval or seeking approval?
It has not. Ms. Wengler can speak to it, but there was a fairly painstaking process with the Air Force initially, before submitting to the FAA for approval. And again, as we understand the process, FAA goes out for public comment or you know, just like every process, they're going to you know, find the interested parties, which would be the Minot Air Force Base. And without their buy-in, there's no chance FAA, you know, we don't believe there's any chance FAA would approve.
And if I remember the letter correctly, the Air Force has stated that if it did get to that stage, that they would oppose the lighting system.
I'd have to read the letter somewhere in here. Okay. So the letter reads, I think kind of in summation here, an automatic light detection system at your Prairie Winds project in North Dakota would jeopardize flight safety and security in and around ICBM missile complexes. As such, I support your efforts to obtain a light mitigation system waiver, and then he gives this point of contact. So they didn't say they'd oppose, but essentially.
Yes, yeah.
I do have a question. This is Pat Fahn. Did the Air Force, their comments, do they relate to LIDS as well? Because they don't say the ADLS. They just say a lighting system, I think.
Okay.
Did the Air Force say anything about LIDS?
I would defer to Ms. Wangler. She was our point person on the contact with the Air Force. She'd be better to speak to that.
Thanks.
Okay, very good. So there's no other questions for you, Mr. Stolle. I think Ms. Wangler is up.
Wonderful. Good morning. My name is Amanda Wangler. I've been employed with Basin Electric since 2005. In my 16 years of service in the co-op, I've had many different roles. One of them is responsible for our FCC and FAA permitting and compliance. So I take care of all those records from Basin from my very early years. I was also the project engineer for Prairie Winds. So I was very involved in everything from siting the turbines through the design and the construction of the facility. And it seems that role never ended, and so anytime something comes up for Prairie Winds, I get called up, so I do appreciate that. So I was assigned this project. Before I was officially assigned, I started working on this issue in 2017 when the legislation was proposed, and so I believe I attended with Jean a couple of meetings and hearings on that. At that time, the technology was new to me, so we started researching the different technology and the vendors all the way back in 2017 so that we would have somewhat of an understanding how it would affect Prairie Winds. Like I said, we started the project officially in January of 2019, and that was to work towards the compliance date of December 31st of 2021. And that would be a further dive into the research on the technology and permitting and right away what we would need to do to install such system. The project would require an FAA permit lighting change. The permits that we got from them in the 2008-2009 timeframe are valid, and we are in full compliance with those. That was actually part of my responsibilities during that time, is to make those Air Force or FAA applications. And so based on that experience, we understood that we needed to coordinate with the Minot Air Force Base. So in March 2019, we contacted Virendry Electric, who is a Basin Electric member. They have a long-standing business relationship with the Minot Air Force Base. They supply power to them and are close business partners. So they were of assistance to us all the way back, starting in 2007, when we were looking to build the Prairie Winds project. So we reached out to them for help with contacts and basically where to go next with the Air Force Base. So September of 2019, we got in touch with U.S. Air Force Deputy Staff Judge Advocate Michael Tomer. And this was after several go-arounds with the Air Force on who to get to the right person. And Mr. Tomer shared many safety and security concerns with me on the ADLS system. He stated that the Air Force position at that time was that they were working on a position paper for ADLS that would be published as the position for the entire Air Force base. And at that time, they were not looking at specific projects because they wanted to get this position paper out. I contacted Mr. Tomer basically monthly, either via phone or email, to try to get an update from him on where this position paper was, because we knew this, the position of the Air Force Base was critical to how our project was going to proceed. So in the next year, in November of 2020, Mr. Tomer retired, and so we basically had to restart these discussions with Air Force Base officials because the position paper never got published. And they were willing to entertain talking about specific projects instead of an overall position. Through these conversations, we received January 2021 the official memorandum confirming that ADLS was not compatible with our Prairie Wind site. Should we have received favorable position from the Air Force Base, our next steps would have been to go through the FAA process. And so to make that FAA application, you have to have a technology vendor chose and a design to submit. And so that would kick off our procurement process where we would evaluate the different vendors that had been approved by the FAA. And through that process, then we would commission them to do a design for us that would need to be submitted with the FAA application. The FAA, after receiving our application, runs an interference study and contacts the different federal agencies in the area to make sure that our whatever lighting change that would be proposed would not cause any issues to communication facilities in the area or any other federal agencies working in the area. That is about all the background information I have. I'd be happy to answer some questions.
Excellent. Thank you, Ms. Wengler. Commissioner Crispin?
Well, I talked to Mr. Soley about LIDS technology and the workability in this, outside of the fact that it hasn't been approved by FAA, mm-hmm. but, you know, looking forward to the day when it potentially is. With your expertise, do you see anything problematic about installation of something like that on Prairie Winds if it's someday something that FAA is favorable to?
So I had visited with Mr. Tomer about the LIDS technology, and at that time they wouldn't even entertain the conversation because there's just not enough information about it, having the FAA not approved it yet. When the FAA approves a study or a technology, they do several studies, and the latest paper I read from the FAA is 75 pages of all the testing that they do on the different facilities. And so without that testing, we have to completely rely on what a potential vendor would tell us. And so we're relying on a salesman versus the technical review of the FAA. So it's just really hard to say at this point. We don't have enough information to be able to make a recommendation.
Okay. And then I also want to follow up with you on one of the questions I asked Kevin, but I didn't have my reference found at the time. As far as what needs a waiver here, in your January 14th letter to the commission, on the second page, you described the two small wind projects to the north of Prairie Winds, and then say both projects would be eligible for a waiver as they are not capable of generating more than 5 megawatts. And so I'm still trying to figure out here, do you just need a waiver for Prairie Winds, or since you mentioned that those two are eligible for a waiver, does that indicate that you need a waiver for those two?
I apologize, Commissioner, that is beyond my scope of expertise. Aneen or Kevin would be much better at answering that than
okay.
I would.
And he has. I was just going to reconfirm since I thought you had worked on these.
Anything
tubes.
Technical you need with those? I'm your lady,
oh, okay.
But permitting, not so much.
Okay, so then we'll stick with Kevin's answer. Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
No other questions.
Okay. Commissioner Crosses?
Just one. Has the military ever expressed concern to you about the conversations that you've had with them, that we're currently having? I'm assuming the information we're talking about is very general and it's not going to compromise operations, but have they ever expressed a concern that we're digging in a little too deep, and that we should be more careful, if you will, and possibly protect some of the information as not to compromise operations?
Yes. When I was speaking with Mr. Tomer over our year of back and forth, his openness with me got much better as time progressed. But, you know, it started with there are safety and security concerns, and that was it. And then eventually a little bit more was shared. But yes, it's fairly uncomfortable to be able to share those conversations just for national security.
Right. And I guess what I would say from my own perspective is if we're ever getting to that point as we go through this particular conversation and not just this hearing, but going forward, please let us know.
I appreciate that.
Because we can certainly handle it. I believe in it. More sensitive manner, if you will.
Sure. If I may, I did write a note when you had asked Mr. Soli about partial lighting, and his response was mostly correct. So, sorry, Kevin.
That's okay. That's why you're here.
So, if we were able to install a ADLS system, it's multiple radars through the site, two, possibly three. So Commissioner Fedorchak was right that there's little to no odds that one fails and the other one doesn't pick up, or we have the system not working. The Air Force's main concern was with those radar systems. We map out the edge of our wind farm as a circle or sphere, whatever it is, and then the FAA requires those radars to reach 6 to 10 miles beyond that sphere. So the concern wasn't about 6 miles around the ballistic site, it's our entire project plus 6 to 10 miles that we would be tracking their movements.
Oh, okay. Thank you. Appreciate that clarification. And partially right.
Yeah, that's. I'll take it.
I will too. I have a couple of daughters, and I would gladly take that many days. So, I don't have any other questions. Thank you.
Okay, and I think my questions have been covered. So thank you. You go ahead, Randy.
You mentioned Michael something, and I can't remember what his title was. What was his name that you worked with?
Deputy Staff Judge Advocate Michael Tomer.
And the letter that you included was from Major General Michael Lutton or Luton. So
correct.
Just to be clear, we're talking about two different people. They just both happened to be Michaels.
Right? Yes, correct.
Okay. Any questions from staff?
I don't believe I have any questions, no.
Okay.
The question I had earlier, I believe, was answered, so.
All right.
Thank you.
Very good. Okay, I think then the company have any other witnesses you'd like to have speak? Can you hit your mic?
It's Basin's position that the rules regarding what we call Willie and Wally, or also known as Minot Wind, are a little bit unclear. You had mentioned that maybe some clarification next session would be possible, and that would resolve all of our issues here. We're still trying, we wanted to keep this as clear as possible, and we could use a little guidance on how to approach that facility.
So you're currently not requesting a waiver for them?
If it was allowed through a motion, I believe, according to the regulations, if the commission deemed it reasonable to allow through motion, that could be included.
Okay, we'll have to, Brian?
Because it doesn't have a site certificate, I don't know that they're even required to get a waiver for it. That's kind of my first initial blush with it. I do remember, and I was trying to find it in our rules, we did try to address this in a previous rulemaking for repowers. When a repower occurs on some of these older, smaller facilities that would now be required to, if they were built now, required to get a site certificate, when and if they repower, they will be required to get a site certificate. At that point, ADLS would kick in. So I couldn't find it in our rules, but I do remember we did think about this ahead of time, and I think we made the rule change to allow that to happen upon a repower because they'd have to get a site certificate and then follow the DDLS rules.
Okay. I would just request that staff work with the company and figure out a best way forward through an order to address Willie and Wally.
Absolutely.
And I was just like to encourage that too. That's why I kept bringing it up. Unless that would drag those facilities into something else by, you know, making it appear like it was required. It seems to me, from my own standpoint at this point, and I know we haven't closed the hearing yet, but if nothing else comes up, I'm pretty comfortable at this point with granting this waiver on Prairie Winds. And I think we could just wrap it up. I mean, I don't know that very many people drive by and look at those as being completely separate and having a different interconnection. I think most people see wind turbines that are flashing. And so, however, it seems like in consultation with the company is the best way to wrap that up. I think is I would be comfortable with.
Okay. So we're to the point where we've concluded the company's presentations. Matt, is there anybody on the phone or online in any way that wants to share thoughts? Okay. All right, so we're at the point where we'll take public testimony. If you are listening and have any thoughts you'd like to share, please hit *9. If you want to speak, and we'll have you introduced. Can you tell if anyone's on the line, Matt? They could be our own staff. or basins. *9 if you want to speak from the public. We're not. Okay. And is it the same *9 for GoToMeeting? Okay, on GoToMeeting, if you want to speak, you just hit unmute and introduce yourself, please. Okay, we're not hearing any comments from the public. So we will close the public comment portion, and I believe that concludes all the technical components of the hearing. If you have any closing comments you'd like to make, Basin, you can sure do so.
Thank you.
No? Staff?
No.
All righty. Then we'll do closing comments. Commissioner Christman.
Well, I don't know if it's us or our guests, but we're not getting very big ratings with our broadcasts, that's for sure. But no, I appreciate the information and making yourselves available for questions. And I do think it's important to work with staff to clarify whether it's required or not, whether there'd be any benefit to including the others. And I think we should be able to work through this relatively quickly. Thank you.
Commissioner Crosses, any closing thoughts?
Thank you for coming in, reinforcing your position. And my belief is that when the legislature gave the commission the ability to grant waivers, this was probably one of the prime examples, if not the example that they had in mind. So appreciate the information once again, and thank you for being here.
Yeah, very good. So I think obviously we want to work through this in a timely manner so that it's taken care of before the deadline. So I would say hopefully staff can work with the company addressing William Wally and also language. My only request is that there be language clearly spelled out in the order that paves the way for ongoing review of new technology and its ability to be applied to this this site versus a permanent waiver that never gets reviewed again and blocks out this area from any consideration in the future of light mitigating technologies. Because who knows what will come down the pike, and it may be perfectly acceptable to the Air Force down the road. So that would be my only request, and hopefully we can get this on the next meeting or at the very latest, our last meeting of the year. So with that, I think our hearing is concluded. Thanks, everyone. Oh, I don't have